All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Guiding Lights. It's good to see you all. Last week, we looked at John 14, verses 15 to 21. And actually, that's only a portion of a divided section within my Bible. There's a section here called Jesus Promises the Holy Spirit. And it starts at John 14, verse 15, but it goes all the way to verse 31, and we didn't get that far. So we're going to be continuing on that same reading this week. And in fact, what I will do, of course, is read the entire thing again to get us back into the groove. But one of the things that I recall talking about last week is how wherever we are on the spiritual path, whatever we may feel our strengths and handicaps and weaknesses are, wherever we may feel that we succeed, wherever we may feel that we fail, etc., etc., really it's extremely helpful to just do our best and trust the healing process. And if you can accept that in a way that those words are intended, it feels very, very good. I do remember once upon a time I talked to a person who interpreted those words differently. I remember I was talking to her. She was very upset about her apparent failures on the spiritual path. And I told her that all she really has to do is her best. That's all she's required to do is her best. And as it turns out, those words were a big stress point for her. And to her, those words, do your best, meant better than you are. It meant do better than you are. Or translated another way, it meant still, you are never good enough. That is not what do your best means. So if you hear the words do your best and somehow your best is something that you always put out further than where you are and it's a place you can't quite reach and therefore you use those words do your best to keep the message you're never good enough, that's a misinterpretation. Do your best at some point could look like only remembering to think about God or purpose one time for an entire day and not even doing much about it, just kind of having a fleeting thought and then forgetting about it and going completely back into the world and completely back into the mind. At some point for all of us, that was our best. So what do you do if doing your best is very, very, very little remembrance of purpose and very, very, very little practice? Just be grateful for that very little. Be grateful that once a day, for a brief moment, you remember. Anything that we are grateful for expands. So if I am grateful for the fact that for a couple of seconds a day I remember my purpose, I think about God or however you want to word that, those couple of seconds are going to become more seconds or more times of a couple seconds or whatever. It will begin to expand. So do your best is not meant to be a line that's just out of reach. Do your best is whatever is within reach. But continuing to do that. I remember in the teachings of Inner Ramana when it talks about doing the mantra, this is a good example of do your best. In fact, let me just read it to you. And of course, this is referring to a mantra, but it could be any spiritual practice that feels right to you could still follow these guidelines. Okay, it says the first rule of following the practice of the mantra is you will use the mantra as often as you remember. Try to avoid remembering the use of the mantra and still not choosing to use it. Resistance may come into the mind in this way. The reminder of mantra may appear and then a thought that you are too busy in the moment to do it properly, and so it is better to do it later. That is nonsense. If the reminder of the mantra has come into the mind now, then now is the perfect time to do it. So what's really interesting about this instruction is this kind of helps us tell the difference between doing our best and maybe letting resistance keep us from doing our best. If, let's say, the mantra is our spiritual practice, we'll just use that as the example. If I only remember once a day to do the mantra, and I do, and I say the mantra to myself once a day, that is doing my best. It says the first rule of following the practice of mantra is you will use the mantra as often as you remember. So if I only remember once a day and I do it once a day, I've done my best. But then the next sentence gives us an example of what might not meet that criteria. It says, try to avoid remembering the use of the mantra and still choosing not to use it. So that would be the mantra shows up in my mind, the reminder to do the mantra shows up in my mind, and then somehow I talk myself out of it. You know, like right now I'm too busy, or that's never going to work for me, or whatever I use to not do it. So, again, let's say that I'm trying to keep my mind on a mantra. It shows up once a day. The reminder to do it shows up. I say, oh, yes, thank you. I am that I am. And I just have gratitude for the fact that I remembered in that moment. And then that's it. If I don't remember anymore, I don't need to beat myself up for it. I did my best by practicing the mantra each time I remembered. I don't remember if I talked about my meditation skills last week or not. I remember talking about it recently, so it might have been here in the guiding light. You know, used to, I could only meditate for 10 minutes. That was my best. You know, now I can meditate longer, but I'm still only doing my best and hoping the meditation will get even longer. You know, I really would like to get to 3 hours a day. But I don't beat myself up for the fact that I am not yet able to meditate for 3 hours a day. I just do what I am able to do, and I'm grateful for that. And I trust that the ability to meditate more will come. So that's kind of a review of last week. Hi, Jackie. Kind of a review of last week. So what I'm going to do now is just play a song. The song that I'm going to play today is called, where is it? Here it is. It's called I Love Loving You. And when I hear this song, I Love Loving You, to me it means God or truth or the true self or Holy Spirit or whatever image you hold up, or Jesus, whatever image you hold up. But it's talking about loving that which is calling us home. So this is I Love Loving You.
I love loving you. God is down. God is here. God is there. God's right where you're sitting now. And I love loving you. I love loving you. I love loving you. I love loving you. I love loving you.
I love that song. Yeah, heart-tugging quality. That's what that song has for me, Jackie. All right, so today I'm going to reread John chapter 14, verses 15 to 21, which we covered last week, but I'll also continue to read all the way to verse 31, and then today we will discuss verses 22 to 31. All right? Danza says, I love loving the song, loving love. Very nice. All right, so here we go. Starting with chapter 14, verse 15, the book of John. If you love me, you will obey what I command. And I will ask the Father, and he will give you another counselor to be with you forever, the Spirit of Truth. The world cannot accept him, because it neither sees him nor knows him. But you know him, for he lives with you and will be in you. I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. Before long, the world will not see me anymore, but you will see me. Because I live, you also will live. On that day, you will realize that I am in the Father, and you are in me. And I am in you. Whoever has my commands and obeys them, he is the one who loves me. He who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I too will love him and show myself to him. And that's the portion that we discussed last week. So that's on last week's recording. So today we'll discuss from this point forward. So verse 22. Then Judas, not Judas Iscariot, said, But Lord, why do you intend to show yourself to us and not to the world? Jesus replied, If anyone loves me, he will obey my teaching. My Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. He who does not love me will not obey my teaching. These words you hear are not my own. They belong to the Father who sent me. All this I have spoken while still with you. But the Counselor, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you all things and will remind you of everything I have said to you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. You heard me say, I am going away, and I am coming back to you. If you loved me, you would be glad that I am going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I. I have told you now before it happens, so that when it does happen, you will believe. I will not speak with you much longer, for the prince of this world is coming. He has no hold on me, but the world must learn that I love the Father and that I do exactly what my Father has commanded me. Come now, let us leave. So those are the verses that we will look at today. So beginning with the question that Judas asked, but Lord, why do you intend to show yourself to us and not to the world? And, you know, Jesus answers that anyone who loves him will obey his teaching, and that anyone who does not love him will not obey his teaching. That reminds me very much of something that Jesus said much earlier in the book of Matthew when he asks us not to cast our pearls before swine. One mistake that we often make, in fact, everybody in their own way makes this mistake. It's a common ego mistake. One mistake that we often make is thinking that other people should think like us. Even before we were on the spiritual path, in whatever way we thought that. You know, if we were good at budgeting money, we thought other people should budget like us. If we were a Republican, we thought other people should think the Republican way. If we were a Democrat, we thought other people should think the Democrat way. If we were big on saving the environment, we thought other people should want to save the environment. I mean, this is the ego. You know, we think other people should think like me. And when we get on the spiritual path, what I call the path of true spirituality, which means the path that is really pointing to truth, the one truth, we usually still have that thought with us because we still have that ego thought system. So now we are on a path of truth and we think other people should think like us. They should be on the path of truth too. You know, whether it's A Course in Miracles that we love and we want them to love that, or NTI, or the Bhagavad Gita, or the Tao Te Ching, or whatever. We think that people should think like us. That's just the ego. The fact that we've brought it to the spiritual path with us does not make it not the ego. It is just the ego. So what Jesus is really saying here is in his own words when he says, he who does not love me will not obey my teaching. You know, another way of understanding that is, you know, the ones that are not ready, the ones that are not currently called to this path, they're not going to listen anyway. You know, so there's no sense in bothering them with this. There's no sense in spending the energy in that way. And in fact, one thing that has occurred to me as I have contemplated this teaching, which really comes up in a lot of different places, in truth teachings, you know, it doesn't come up in Christianity. Christianity is all about going out and spreading the good news, right? Going out and preaching to others and trying to convert others and getting others to think like me, right? But truth teachings, that's not a part of truth teachings. Truth teachings are exactly the opposite. In fact, another way that Jesus demonstrated this, besides the do not cast your pearls before swine teaching, is also in the book of Matthew when he talks about going into the closet and praying, right? Spirituality is a very private, a very inward practice. Others truly don't even need to know about it. And so as I've run across this same teaching over and over again about not spreading the good news, not preaching, not trying to convert others, right? I keep seeing this showing up. As I've contemplated this, what I've come to see is this is what I would call an energy distraction. And what I mean by energy is the love of truth or the desire for truth kind of creates a certain amount of energy in us. And that energy can then go into watching our own mind, can go into contemplation of scripture or quotes. It can go into spending time in meditation. But of course, what the ego wants to do is it wants to divert that energy so that we don't use the energy in such effective ways. And so one way the ego diverts that energy is through, I'm going to just call it preaching. I'll put the word preaching on it. Going out and trying to convert others, trying to get others to think our way, even if it's our husband or our children. So it takes that energy that has been created by our desire for truth and it diverts it in an outward focus rather than an inward focus. And in this way, the ego gets to survive a little longer because we spend the energy in an outward focus. It's almost as if you had money and the purpose of the money was to buy some really good nutritional food. And on your way to the vegetable section of the grocery store, you walk by the candy aisle and you end up buying so much candy you don't really have money left over for the vegetables, the fruits and vegetables. You know, it's kind of like that, right? You use the energy that was meant, given to you so that you could go inward, and you spend it outward. And so, you know, I think this is why this teaching keeps showing up. We want to take this energy and we want to spend this energy going inward rather than outward, trying to convert others or get others to think like me. And again, if you just remember that wanting others to think like me is nothing but ego, it's pretty easy to let that go, assuming letting go of ego is one of your purposes, which I assume it is. I don't know why else you'd be here with me on a beautiful summer afternoon unless letting go of ego was one of your purposes, right? So, again, listening with that ear, the question is, but Lord, why do you intend to show yourself to us and not to the world? You see, even Judas is thinking we need to convert people. And Jesus replied, if anyone loves me, he will obey my teaching. My Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. He who does not love me will not obey my teaching. These words you hear are not my own. They belong to the Father who sent me. Let's talk about another sentence that's within this little paragraph that I'm reading right now. That sentence is, my Father will love him. This is the one who obeys my teaching. My Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. Okay, so I have this desire for truth, which creates this energy, which I am now going to spend going inward. I'm going to make it to the fruit and vegetable aisle. I'm not going to stop at the candy aisle. I'm not going to try to convert others. I'm going to go inward. And I'm going to use the energy in the way that it was intended to be used. When I go inward, whether I'm going inward with the focus of watching the mind, go inward with the focus of contemplation of scripture or quotes from masters, or go inward with meditation, self-inquiry, awareness, watching awareness. When I go inward, if I spend that energy by going inward, the result is more of the same. I get more energy to spend going inward, but I also get any clarity, any guidance, any insight, anything at all that is going to help me with that continuing inward journey. So by saying yes and by going within, I receive whatever I need to continue that journey. Of course, if I never go within, You know, if instead I'm too focused on trying to get others to think like me, and this happens a lot. I mean, since I've been on the spiritual path, our technology has changed. You know, we used to all hang out in Yahoo groups, and now we hang out in Facebook, and of course here in Paltalk. But, you know, I have seen so many discussions in my years where people are trying to convince others to think like me. It doesn't matter whether we're both course students, but we have a slightly different interpretation of the course. I'm trying to get you to think like me. Or whether we're both students of Ramana Maharshi and we have a slightly different understanding of his teaching, but in this discussion I'm trying to get you to think like me. This is such a distraction. It would be such a wonderful gift to ourselves if we just said, you know what? Other people can just be where they are. They're not my concern. My only concern is going inward. And in fact, Awakening Together is actually based on that premise. One of Awakening Together's core values is about letting other people be where they are. So I don't need to waste any energy. None. As a member of Awakening Together who has agreed that its core values are my core values, I don't need to waste any energy trying to get others to think like me. I can allow them just to be right where they're at, right? And I can take all of that energy and I can go within. But of course, what a lot of people on the spiritual path must do, because there are so many discussions, so many, you know, what even could be called spiritual debates, and this has always happened, you know it's always happened, because when you study the quotes of the masters going back even hundreds of years, you're going to find quote after quote after quote where they're recommending to spiritual aspirants that they let go of debating spiritual concepts, right? So what a lot of spiritual students will do is they'll take that energy and they will spend it by trying to get other people to think like me, not only by converting others, you know, you could say from the outside of the spiritual path, but even within the spiritual path. You know, we need to agree on what these words mean, and I need to debate with you until you agree with me, right? It's such a waste of energy. And if I spend my time on, I'm going to call this the outward spiritual path. It's an outward focused spiritual path. If I spend my time on the outward focused spiritual path, trying to convince others to see the spiritual teachings in the same way that I do, and I'm involved in the debate and involved in the discussion, right? I'm actually not in the place that I need to be to receive ongoing insight and guidance. Because that comes from the inward spiritual path. So by being focused on the outward spiritual path, it's like I'm cutting off my own hand. I'm stunting my own growth. The ego's winning. Right? So this core value that we have to allow others to be where they are and just let them. I mean, hear those words. Just let them be there. Let them be there. Let them be God's business, not yours. Right? And then I take all of the energy that is given to me and I go within. I actually go within. I practice the inner spiritual path instead of the outer spiritual path. Then when I go within, I get those additional insights and those additional realizations and those additional guidances that I need to take me further and further in. And so that's what I feel Jesus means when he says, if anyone loves me, he will obey my teaching, right? He will take the inward path. My Father will love him and we will come to him and make our home with him. Because he has taken the inward path, there will be additional insights, additional guidance, right? You find your way home by going inward, yeah? So let me read that whole first paragraph again, see if we covered everything. Jesus replied, "If anyone loves me, he will obey my teaching. My Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. He who does not love me will not obey my teaching. These words you hear are not my own. They belong to the Father who sent me. And Jesus says this a lot throughout the book of John. He understands. He seems to have great understanding that at least the majority of the people who are listening to him think this is him speaking. You know, like this is Jesus. And in fact, to this day, people have that misinterpretation that this was Jesus speaking. It's a misinterpretation because it was spontaneity speaking through Jesus. And that same spontaneity has spoken through more people than we could ever even begin to count. It's one spontaneity, one wisdom, one truth coming through whoever is willing to get out of the way and let it come. It's almost as if Jesus knew that he was going to be put up on a pedestal and worshiped by millions of people someday, and that would be nothing but a distraction. And so he tried over and over and over again to say, these are not my words. It is not me. It is the Father. Always pointing to the Father. And the advantage of always pointing to the Father is that if someone hears correctly, then they know that it's within them too. You know, one thing that's really cool about Nisargadatta Maharaj is Nisargadatta Maharaj visited what he calls his guru maybe only once. I don't know for sure. I haven't done deep research on this, but no more than a few times, and maybe only once. And he visited his guru, and his guru said some things to him, most importantly telling him to watch the I Am Presence, to focus on the I Am Presence and to ignore everything else. And then Nisargadatta's guru died. So he couldn't go back to his guru. He died. But Nisargadatta says that he loved his guru enough to follow his instructions. And so he did what his guru asked him to do, and he focused on the I Am Presence, and then within, I think it was 3 years, he awoke. What this demonstrates is, although there may be an outer figure that is helpful to us, like Nisargadatta's guru was definitely helpful to him, there may be an outer figure that is helpful to us. Again, the path is not an outward path. The path is an inward path. Maybe you only need to meet your guru once. Maybe that's enough. And if you listen very, very carefully to what that teacher says, maybe you receive everything you need in one conversation. And then you take that and you practice that to the best of your ability, the inward path. And of course, as Jesus would put it there, the Father meets you there and gives you everything else you need. You know, it's interesting because I say right now, because it feels right, I say right now that my teacher is Michael Langford. And I did get to meet Michael Langford. I did get to spend a day with him. I talked to him, and you guys have heard recordings from that day. But when I left, although I'd love to see Michael Langford again, that would be great if it happens. When I left, I knew that I did not have to pick up and move to his area and become what you might call an everyday follower of Michael Langford. I actually knew that he gave me everything I needed that day. Everything. And it was just a matter of whether I would come back and practice it or not. And in fact, even in the conversation with Elie Ruzdahr, you know, I don't know if I put Elie Ruzdahr on the level of my teacher like I do Michael, but I have deep, deep respect for her. And so I for many years, I've wanted to have a nice conversation with Elie Ruzdahr, kind of an interview. And finally, I got to have it. And in one conversation, you can even hear it on the audio, you answered all of my questions. I don't have any more questions. I know what to do, and now it's just a matter of doing it. So, Jesus is telling us that the words that we hear are not His. The words come from the Father. And we know that those words can come from a lot of different teachers, including a lot of different scriptures. We have easy access to these words. Easy access to these teachings. Especially on our spiritual path, they are so abundant. But the question is, do we practice them? Do we practice them? I love one of Michael Langford's metaphors about two men with property who needed water. They both needed a well. And how one of the men talked a lot about digging a well. He discussed it with everyone. He got lots of advice from lots of different people. Talked about all kinds of imagined problems that you could run into while digging a well. Looked for all kinds of solutions. Read lots of books about digging a well. Had medicine men come out and bless the ground so that he would have more luck digging the well. And years and years and years passed, and he didn't begin digging. While he was doing all of these other things, the man on the other property just took a shovel and began digging the well. No discussion, no reading books, just digging. Which one do you think found water? Well, sometimes on the spiritual path, we're much more like that first man. We spend lots and lots of years talking about truth, talking about spiritual practice, listening to different opinions, finding controversy, finding confusions, reading more books. Maybe this book will have something the other books didn't have. And we go on and on and on. But we do not sit down and engage in the practice. So what Jesus seems to be saying here is that if we love Him, and He doesn't mean Him specifically, He really means truth. If we love Him, then we will practice. And if we practice, then He and the Father will come to us, right? Again, symbols. We'll have the insight, the clarity, and everything else we need to continue the practice, to continue digging the well. Everything we need will be given until we finally hit water, awakening. Now I'm going to continue, starting with verse 25. All this I have spoken while still with you, but the Counselor, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you all things and will remind you of everything I have said to you. So again, he's telling them that everything they need will be within. They just need to choose the inner path rather than the outer path of distraction. Right? He says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives." Now, he doesn't explain what he means by that. I do not give to you as the world gives. But the way that the world seems to give is it takes something that I have that you don't, and then it gives it to you, right? Jesus, again, he's using these words about giving, right? He says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you." And then he says, "I do not give to you as the world gives." So I think that probably what he's saying here is I'm not taking something that I have and you don't and giving it to you. My words that I give you peace are just a symbol. The truth is, the peace that I am, you are also. And if you will take the inner path, you will discover it's always been there. So this is why he says, I don't give as the world gives. I'm not giving you something you don't have. My words are merely a symbol here, a comforting symbol, Right? But the peace is already there. It's the peace that you are. He says, do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid. You heard me say, I am going away and I am coming back to you. If you loved me, you would be glad that I am going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I. It's funny because I have a purpose of awakening, a purpose of ego death. And at different points in my life, I have run across people that are very close to me who have expressed that they don't want me to go to that full conclusion. They fear losing what they know of as Regina if I go to that full conclusion. It's kind of funny to watch them because sometimes on the one hand they know that that's what we're all here for, that's what we're all here to do, and yet at the same time, you know, they love me, me being the body, the personality, and they fear that they will lose what they love if I awaken. And I don't know that they won't. I mean, I don't know, you know, when awakening happens and the ego dies, I don't know what will replace me and move this body. I don't know what its interests will be. I don't know if it will hang out with the same people or go in a completely different direction. I can't make any promises about it. So I can't make any promises to them when they express fear about losing me if I should awaken. Well, it seems like Jesus is having a similar conversation here. He says, you heard me say I am going away and I am coming back to you. If you loved me, you would be glad that I am going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I. And when he says, if you loved me, I don't feel that he means me, the person. So like, let's say we were having a discussion. Let's say you were one of my friends who was a little concerned, maybe in some cases a lot concerned, about me waking up because you thought you would lose Regina. And you love Regina. All right, imagine yourself, if you can, loving Regina. Regina, the person, the personality, is an important part of your life. You know, I'm your sister or your mother or your wife or, you know, something like that. And you're afraid of losing me, Regina. If I say to you what Jesus is saying, if you loved me, you would be happy for me. The me in that sentence doesn't mean Regina. When I say, if you loved me, I mean truth. If you loved truth, if your focus was on the treasure, you could never in any way ask anyone not to awaken. If your focus was on the treasure, the only thing you would want for anyone is awakening. Okay, Lynn, I know enough not to be offended by that sentence, but it looks funny. Lynn writes, I would love for Regina to be gone. when Jesus says, if you loved me, right, then you would want me to go to the Father, what he's really doing is it's kind of like saying, put your eyes on the treasure instead of form. Put your eyes on the eternal instead of the temporary. It's really like saying, join me in my focus. Right? Join me. Put your eyes on the treasure. So Jesus says, you heard me say, I am going away and I am coming back to you. And the I am coming back to you, of course, refers to the inner insight, the inner wisdom that will be received if we choose to take the inner path. So Jesus says, you heard me say, I am going away and I am coming back to you. If you loved me, the truth, you would be glad that I am going to the Father. You know, in fact, you would celebrate every awakening. For the Father is greater than I. It is the truth, right? And if you love the truth, then you want the truth to be realized. I have told you now before it happens, so that when it does happen, you will believe. I will not speak with you much longer, for the prince of this world is coming. So it seems that, again, I don't know how much Jesus knows. I don't know if he had premonitions or anything like that. But it seems like he, at the very least, has an intuitive sense that the shit's about to hit the fan, as they say. And he has already made a decision that he is not going to stray from the truth, regardless of what's about to happen. So it might be like, for example, now of course with Awakening Together, we try very hard to be a law-abiding organization. But let's imagine, let's just pretend that somewhere, someone has been taking money and making it look like it was me taking the money. I think things like this have happened before, right? Someone's been taking money and making it look like it was me. And I'm, you know, ignorant. I don't even know that it's happening until that it's discovered and reported to the IRS. And now I am charged with tax fraud, because when you take donations for personal use, that is considered tax fraud. And I'm facing a sentence in prison. So all of this is happening. And I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I know I didn't take the money, so it's possible that as we go through this trial, that will come out and that I will be found innocent and not have to go to prison. But I also know that whoever did take the money, you know, tried very hard to make it look like it was me, and so they may think I'm guilty, they may believe I took the money, and I may end up in prison. So I don't know how this is going to play out, but I know that things are hitting the fan, right? And I make a decision. Yeah, I'm making this up. Nobody's taking any money. No, I'm making this up, guys. But it's happened to other people before. This is not this has happened in the world. So I make a decision that as I go through this circumstance, I am going to stay focused on truth and truth only. Right? It seems that Jesus is making that decision now. Even if he doesn't know exactly what's going to happen, he sees the writing on the wall. There's enough things in place that he knows something is going to happen. And he is deciding in advance that he's going to go through this focused on truth and truth only. Right? That is his decision. So he says, I have told you now before it happens, so when it does happen, you will believe. I will not speak with you much longer, for the prince of this world is coming. He has no hold on me, but the world must learn that I love the Father and that I do exactly what my Father has commanded me. Come now, let's leave. Yeah, some of this craziness happened to Michael Singer. Exactly. I had him in mind as one of the times when it's happened. Yeah, so these things do happen. So let's imagine I get together a few people around me who do sincerely believe that I'm innocent. They know Regina. They know Regina would never take the money. And they're nervous and they're afraid. And they're saying, you know, Regina, you got to do this and you got to do this and you got to do this. Right? They're concerned about this Regina, the body, the personality. Right? They want this Regina to be safe. And I'm saying, I only want truth. So I'm explaining to them as best as I can, I'm probably not going to do the things that you're suggesting. Because I love truth. I want truth. And I'm telling you in advance, even before we get involved in this trial, that I might not look like someone who's trying to protect herself, because that's not where my focus is. I'm telling you in advance so that you will know, right? This is the kind of conversation that Jesus is having right now. And then he says, come now, let us leave. So we'll get to, you know, just like, I love the fact that the title of this ended up being The Guiding Light, even though that happened by accident. I didn't know this was going to be like a soap opera, but it is kind of like a soap opera. We have a cliffhanger now, you know. Jesus has just told them something's coming. He even said it's the prince of the world, which really means, you know, it's something big, right? It's like Satan's going to be involved in this. I'm going to be acting very different than you expect me to act, because I'm only focused on awakening, and I'm telling you now so that you will understand as we go through this. And in fact, I did this with my family. I may have told this story before, but in 2004, when I consciously started the spiritual path, and I got to tell you, I was so ignorant, I didn't even really know what the word enlightenment meant. I mean, I was so ignorant, but I had to find words to explain to my family this calling that happened on the cruise ship, right, where my whole life changed in a nanosecond during a prayer. I had to find some way of explaining to my family that everything was different now. And I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew everything was different now. And I knew I was going to begin making decisions. I didn't know what decisions, because I didn't know what was coming, but I knew I was going to begin making decisions differently than I used to in the past. I knew things were going to be different. So what I did is I went to my family and I told my family, I have decided to become enlightened in this lifetime. And I explained to them that that was going to be the basis of my decision making in the future, where in the past, the basis of my decision making had been more worldly, right? More of the normal worldly types of decision making. You know, like, oh, I got to make a good income to support my family, that kind of thing. And I told them, just like Jesus is telling this audience, I told them, I don't know what's coming. I don't know what's going to happen, but I want you to know that this is now how I'm making my decisions. And of course, within, you know, several months of that, within about a year of that, I was leaving my job and now not working for a living, sitting reading the Bible and letting an inner voice interpret it for me, and all of this stuff that would be very strange to my family. But I think my family has always been able to accept it to some degree, because I told them before it happened, things are changing. I'm going to be making my decisions differently. I don't know what's going to happen, but I want you to know in advance that I have decided, you know, to become enlightened in this lifetime, and that's now driving me. There was something about telling them right up front. And Kathy says, were they talking about you like you were crazy? No. In fact, I don't see Wayne here, so let me just tell you a little more about the story. A few years later, and by now I was already living in North Carolina and already riding NTI, Jasmine was 10 years old, and my dad and stepmother took us to China for her 10th birthday so that she could go back and visit China. And one day we were in China, and we were sitting in an airport waiting for a plane from one city to another city in China. And I don't remember the beginning of the conversation with my dad. Oh, yes, I do. He was worried because, remember, at this time I was making no income at all. There were no donations at all. I was just sitting in my house, writing NTI, and watching the bank account go down, down, down. And my dad was really worried, not only that I wasn't earning money, but he was really worried that I wasn't earning Social Security. You know, what about, and he says, I know that you're okay right now. I mean, he could see that. I know that you're okay right now, but what about the future? What about retirement? You know, you aren't earning any Social Security or saving any money or anything. And I said, Dad, I said, you and I have a lot of things in common. And I remember I listed a few things that we had in common. I don't remember what they were, but I listed them. And then I said, but there's one thing that's different. I said, you're living as if the world is real. I'm living as if it isn't. And my dad's a really practical guy. And I just told him, I'm living as if the world isn't real. And do you know what he said to me? He said, Regina, there's only one thing I know. There's a lot of, I don't remember the exact word he used, foolish people or crazy people or stupid people, something like that. There's a lot of foolish people in this world. But you aren't one of them. Yeah. You are not one of them. So even though I am not earning a living, I am not saving for my future, and I've just told my dad I'm living as if the world is not real, his trust in me was impeccable. He couldn't understand a thing, but his trust in me was impeccable. That's the way my family's always been with me. Even though they don't understand this path, my mom sat in a gathering. She went to a 3-day gathering with me once, and she sat there as I told stories about, you know, me as an apple, while Jasmine took a bite out of me, and told my stories about, like, the towel rack and the floor in Shanghai, right, loving me. She sat and listened to every one of those stories, and one lady finally asked my mom, just directly, right during the gathering, she asked my mom, what do you think about this? And my mom said something like, well, I've always trusted Regina. That was like her only answer. I've always trusted Regina. You know? So, and maybe some of that has to do with I kind of gave them that heads up that things were going to change now, right? That I had decided to be enlightened in this lifetime and I didn't know what was going to happen. I also remember when I told my family that, that again, things were going to change. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew things would be different. I remember my mom got afraid that I would end up homeless. She knew that Peace Pilgrim was my inspiration, and as you all know, Peace Pilgrim was homeless. And I remember I looked at my mom and I said, Mom, the only thing I know is, as long as I need a home, I will have one. If I don't have a home, it means I don't need one. And what's amazing about all of that is all of these stories that I'm telling you are from April of 2004. April of 2004 is when, now of course, I first tried to read the course much earlier, like around 93, I think, and I couldn't understand it. But April of 2004 is the month that I asked, because I'd achieved a bunch of goals, and I asked, what's next in my mind? And I was reminded of the course. I took the course out. I read the manual for teachers. I was then inspired to dedicate myself to the course. I took the course on the Disney cruise. I began the text and the workbook, as well as saying that prayer, which changed my life, because that's where it came down over me, right, that I would dedicate my life to God. And it's in that same month, April, when I'm having this conversation with my family. Okay, things have changed now. So this was all at the very, very, very beginning, before I knew anything, before I knew I was going to be guided to leave my job, before I knew about NTI, way before I knew about Awakening Together. But I knew things were going to be different. So you see, there can be an intuition, even though you don't have anything to back that intuition up. So when we're reading the Bible now, we know the end of the story. We know that on this very night, Jesus is going to be arrested. He's going to be tried, and he's going to be crucified within 24 hours. We know that. What we don't know is, did Jesus know that? When he's having this discussion with the apostles. Because I didn't know what was going to happen to Regina when I had my discussion with my family. Just the strong intuitive feeling, things are changing now, even though I didn't know what a single thing was. It's going to be different, and I want you to understand why it looks different. And Jesus is having the same conversation with the apostles. Something's going to happen now. And I want to tell you in advance so that you will understand, right? All right. Well, Regina has a long list of to-do tasks, so she needs to get to work. I do want to tell you all that I will not be here next Wednesday because I will be on vacation, family vacation. We're going to South Dakota. So I'll be back in 2 weeks, and I will email Lynn with the days that I will miss while I'm on vacation, but one of them will be next Wednesday. So I'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. All right? Thanks for listening to me. Bye. Oh, yeah, and Dansa says, wasn't Jesus homeless more or less? Yes. But right now, Regina is not. Isn't that amazing? Regina lives in a lovely home. So we're in South Dakota. We're going to be staying in Rapids, and then we're going to all of the typical places, Wounded Knee, the Badlands, Custer National Park or State Park, whatever it is, the Presidents, what's that, Mount Rushmore, all that kind of, you know, it's just a typical family vacation. All right. Bye, y'all.